just automatically kind of goes into the next slide where it'll load. And I'll try and do that for you sort of right between sessions, so it's right up there. And then you just control it with the mouse.
And so just left-click it, and it'll keep moving.
Yep, it'll keep moving. It'll advance as you want it to advance.
Okay.
See, it just go like, there's a click.
Okay.
And then, you know, back arrow can go back, too, so. Okay? So, sure, it should be a piece of cake. And,
oh my God, I'm sure.
Do you know how to use this?
I don't either. Oh my God, hurry up. She's taking pictures, so I'm pretending like I'm talking.
Okay, now. 1, 2, 3. That's perfect.
Okay, there we go.
Yep, and you can, you know, you're close to the arrow keys here too if you want to use those too, so
cover works good.
What do you got for your time, people, with your watch? I'm good. You're following me around this meeting. Okay, good. Good morning. My name is Gretchen Sampson, and I will be your moderator for this program. You are at session number 4189.0, Leadership Development Models in Public Health Practice Settings. So welcome, and on behalf of the Health Administration section, we are very pleased to have a dynamic group of presenters here today. I would welcome you to join the Health Administration section if that's an interest area of yours, and to celebrate with us our 30-year or 100-year anniversary by visiting the booth downstairs in the Expo Hall. So our first presenter is Suzanne Avala-Hobbs, and Suzanne holds a doctorate in health policy and administration from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where she is a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management in the Gilling School of Global Public Health. There she directs the doctoral program in health leadership, the world's first distance DRPH program. She is also a research fellow at the UNC Center for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention. Please welcome Sue Hobbs.
I'm going to embarrass you, Kelly. Kelly Wietenbach, just from Wyoming, just walked in. She's one of our DRPH students in the most recent cohort. And I have no relationships to disclose at this time. Thanks, everyone. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here to visit with you and tell you a bit about our distance DRPH program. What I'm going to do is try very quickly to describe some of the advantages that we see in distance doctoral level leadership training for mid-career working health professionals, and to also share with you some of the challenges that we've had in administering the program, also opportunities that we see for creating distance DRPH programs. We think that there should be many, many more, and I know that there are some in development as I speak. I'd also like to talk a bit about the technology and some funding issues that may be of interest to any other institutions that may be considering establishing a distance DRPH program. As Gretchen mentioned, this is the first distance DRPH. There are other executive and distance doctoral level programs. I definitely want to acknowledge that. This one was launched in 2005 using internet video technology. So in contrast to other distance type programs that have existed in the past, this one conducts class time in real time. You know, so everybody sees each other and hears each other. It's happening in real time. This program superseded a long-standing residential DRPH leadership program that was in existence at UNC for 12 or 14 years. We eventually disbanded that program in 2004 because we found that we had an increasingly difficult time finding qualified students who could take a sabbatical in their careers for a year to come back to school to campus full-time to go back for a doctorate. So the technology was only barely available in 2005 for us to do this using internet video. In fact, our School of Public Health IT folks had to cobble together some software that was not commercially available so that we could get a cohort of people up online at the same time. And that's what we used when we started in 2005. The technology has since evolved, and I'll describe that. But the program emphasis is on leadership development. Our top goal for our program is to produce individuals who are committed to taking senior level or top jobs where they can have the maximum influence on improving the public's health. And again, we target mid-career health professionals who are working full-time, both domestically and now internationally. Just a word about admissions criteria. Like most doctoral programs, we are looking for people with a graduate GPA of at least 3.0 and GMAT and GRE scores at least in the 50th percentile. Our program, in contrast to some DRPH programs, is administered through our grad school. And so the GRE, GMAT, is a grad school requirement. And I'd be happy to talk about the pros and cons of requiring standardized test scores. For older adults, these can be a challenge. And although I will say that for those that we admit into our DRPH program, the GRE scores are comparable to those scores for those who we admit into our PhD program. We require a prior master's or doctoral degree. The master's degree does not have to be in public health, but if somebody is admitted into the program and they do not have an MHA or an MPH from an accredited school of public health, then they do have to complete the MPH core courses sometime during the program. And that has been a challenge for some of the students that we've admitted, and we've addressed that recently by deciding that going forward we're going to individually coach, we're going to take them on a case-by-case basis, and in some cases recommend that people who do have a substantial amount of core courses to take, they defer their admission for a year and knock those out before they start the doctoral program. We require several years of postgraduate management or leadership experience. So we're looking for people that have had at least 5 years of experience. In reality, those we admit tend to have much more, 10, 15, and upwards. We are looking for people with demonstrated leadership capacity and proven willingness to use their leadership skills to apply them. And again, we want people that aspire to, who have exhibit a passion for public health and aspire to top jobs. We also are looking for people that have practice-oriented career goals. While we recognize the importance of teaching and research, if somebody approaches us and aspires to a research career, we don't feel we prepare them for that in this program. Likewise, we're not looking for people who aspire to an academic career. We're looking for people that are committed to remaining out in the field where we think the need for leadership development is greatest. And this is just a quick look at one of our Tuesday night classes, and I'll talk a bit more about how all of this works. But the technology we're using now, we moved from what we cobbled together in the School of Public Health in 2005. We moved to Macromedia Breeze, which is now Adobe Connect. And you can see in the upper left-hand corner, there's a chat function. So students are kind of multitasking, and instructors too, during these classroom sessions. Now, I have to say that these faces look a little bored at the moment, but I think they're just in intense concentration on that night. So this is how the video looks. We connect for our audio is over the phone lines. We do not use voice over internet. We don't think the quality is quite there. It's not consistent. And so we're using a conference calling option. But you can see that there's the ability for data sharing. We don't use many PowerPoint slides in this program, but there isn't a lot of didactic teaching. But you can kind of get a feel for the level of interactivity that this model enables us to use. The person in the upper left-hand corner in the white t-shirt is Sebastian Weiner. He's a physician in Paris, France. He works for the French government. In the middle on the top row is Rachel Wong. She is in Honolulu. And lower left-hand corner, Neka Emenyanu. She lives on plot number one in Ambarara, Uganda, and has no trouble connecting for class. I think she was on business traveling that day. At any rate, we have, as you'll see, students all over the world doing very well connecting for class. So this is a three-year program. It's cohort-based. Everybody moves through the program in lockstep with each other. The classes were all designed from scratch specifically for this program. So nobody takes these DRPH courses but the people enrolled in the program. The program confers a DRPH in health administration. It requires three short trips to Chapel Hill in years one and two of the program, and that's for 3 or 4 days each time they come. The program in total is 45 credit hours, and the courses are organized according to competency clusters, and we lump them into sort of course themes of leadership, public health content, and research literacy. So we stress literacy here. We don't teach the students high level research analysis skills. We aim for research literacy. Most of the learning takes place in people's homes or offices, but faculty and students are able to travel, and they can connect for class wherever they are. And I think that the big advantage to this program in terms of the capacity to enroll international students is the fact that this enables everybody to be working full-time in country while they complete their doctoral leadership training. Our learning philosophy, we don't feel that we can teach leadership didactically. It really has to be more of an experiential learning. Interaction through in-depth case analysis and group discussion is the route we use. Lectures, there's very little lecturing. I was joking with Joan before we started the session that we've had a few students that have complained and said, you know, where are the lectures from the instructors? we're expecting lectures. We really don't feel that leadership can be taught that way. And so, the discussions during real time, when we're in class, and during the on-campus sessions are incredibly rich. And we also think that mentorship is the key to lifelong learning. We involve all of our students with each other, with the other cohorts. We involve our alumni, and we bring them back and have them teach and serve as guest discussants. And we intend to maintain long-term relationships with our students through a variety of means. A word about the campus visits. We use this time to introduce students to various opportunistically to various leaders, not always in the healthcare field, but people from whom we think they can learn leadership insights and lessons. We use this time to launch and wrap up courses so students have face time with instructors. We do continuous program evaluation. We do that via focus groups, and as Kelly and any of the other students in the program can tell you, we are constantly asking everybody what's working, and more importantly, what isn't working. If this is going to work for adult learners and working professionals who are very busy, you know, we feel we've got to be very, very responsive. And then we also use the time for meeting with mentors, dissertation advisors, and committee members. In the future, because this is a virtual program, so to speak, we would like to take the show on the road. UNC has Winston House. It's a kind of a satellite campus in London, England. We'd like to take the groups there. We'd like to meet in Atlanta at CDC. We'd like to go to Washington, D.C., et cetera. So, again, opportunistically, we feel that, and the program is very dynamic in that way. We take advantage of the connections that some of the students have who are in each cohort, and opportunistically, we'd like to be able to meet anywhere on this earth. The dissertation, it's rigorous, it's applied, it's very practical. And our aim is for students to combine their skills and knowledge in research, public health content, and leadership to identify a problem, usually within the organization in which they work, and to arrive in a scholarly and systematic way at a solution to that problem. And then to the final chapter of their dissertation is a plan. Which an action plan, which if implemented, could improve the public's health. So we encourage our students to work on a dissertation that's going to be of benefit to their organization, because we do feel it's important that organizations support their participation in the program. Our dissertation committees are comprised of 5 members. At least one of those individuals has to be from our department, the Department of Health Policy and Management. And if there is only one, then that person is the chair of the committee. And then we require 2 additional full graduate faculty members to come from the School of Public Health. After those 3, the other 2 can be from anywhere. And so often individuals will have a committee member from their place of employment or from another university or from another setting. The students are quite diverse, and we choose for maximum diversity. Racial and ethnic diversity for sure, but geographic diversity, diversity in backgrounds and interests. So we ultimately feel that students are going to learn as much from each other as they do from the faculty. The first 2 cohorts we admitted into this program were comprised only of individuals living in the U.S. The third and fourth cohorts included international students. And I'll just quickly show you. This is cohort 1. In 2005, we admitted 9 students, and one of them in year 3 moved to the Caribbean. In year 2, we admitted 10 students. We thought things were going well and we could handle one more. And you can see sort of where they were clustered. In year 3, we added Rachel in Honolulu, Nika in Uganda, Habib in Beirut, and Sebastian in Paris. And we increased the cohort size to 11. And then this past year, we added a student, an American, working in Hong Kong at the School of Public Health, and an American working in Jakarta. And that cohort was 11 students as well. These students are dentists, lawyers, physicians, nurses, other allied health professionals. They work in hospital administration, in traditional public health settings. They work in pharma. They are business people. We have in the first cohort a journalist who worked for the Associated Press, who has since graduated. So we look for people as well who work in non-traditional entrepreneurial type settings. So this is what it looks like right now, all cohorts combined. How's it going? Well, of the first cohort we admitted, 5 have finished, and 5 of the 9. So they made it in 3 years, and the remainder are due to finish up by the end of this year, possibly early spring. Like I said, we are constantly evaluating this to make sure that it's that folks are moving through the program efficiently and that their experience is a good one. Constantly refining the technology and tweaking the curriculum. There is an advisory committee that is comprised of members of the School of Public Health, as well as current students and alums. And of course, we have oversight from our School of Public Health Academic Programs Committee, and in the next year, we'll have our first graduate school review. But in general, the addition of the international students has, for the most part, really, I would say, been seamless and has been incredibly enriching. You know, we feel that the perspective that the foreign students bring to the program is invaluable. Some of the courses are sort of U.S.-centric, but again, you know, we look at every cohort is unique, and we tweak the curriculum to meet the needs of the cohort. And so far, all of the international students we've had have appreciated the way the courses are designed and set up, the level of emphasis on U.S. matters. But then they too bring to the table their respective international perspectives. So, and that's integrated into each course. Our challenges. Without a doubt, cost of operation is a major challenge. And our primary expenses are administrative support, faculty salaries. Now, we use the faculty from the Department of Health Policy and Management, and other faculty, regular graduate faculty from throughout the School of Public Health, are all involved in teaching in the program. But there are some topics for which we have got to seek outside support. We don't have all of the expertise within our department. So there are practitioners that we have to hire and pay as adjunct faculty to participate, and that's expensive. We have other executive education costs. The way this program was designed, we did for the first few years, meet off campus in sort of a retreat setting. In our case, the Carolina Inn, or on Franklin Street at the Franklin Hotel, where we had everybody in this really tightly controlled environment and provided all the meals and the lodging, and we could start right away at 8 o'clock and have a breakfast speaker and know that everybody was going to be there in the room because they were all staying in the same motel. We have since, at the time the program started, we had a policy at UNC whereby departments were able to collect all of their tuition receipts, which we funneled right back into the program. A year ago, there was a campus-level decision to centralize receipt of tuition, and so that has posed a major challenge for us, and we have not overcome that challenge yet. Training and support of faculty on the technology has been somewhat of a challenge, not too difficult, but there are faculty vary in the extent to their comfort level in working with technology. And so we always have a teaching assistant available during class time to troubleshoot technology issues. Mid-career, older students, executive students are busy, they're hard driving, and they're very demanding. And it's a good thing. But they receive, we give them a lot of attention. And faculty vary in the extent to which they respond well to that. we have a fair number of minority students represented in our cohorts, Hispanic, African American, Native American, Asian. But we need many more. And we are struggling with how to recruit minority students. So it's an ongoing discussion. And I think it's getting better, but there is, stigma to distance education, and I think we're beginning to overcome that, and it's around quality issues, but I think we feel very strongly that the quality of this program is exceptional. There is tremendous demand for the program. We had 150 applications last year for 11 slots. So therefore, we know that we can never take more than 10 or 12 students a year. There is a huge demand for this, and so what we're hoping to do next is help to establish a network of partner programs globally to help accelerate doctoral leadership training for working professionals, which is so badly needed. Helping other schools develop similar programs so that there can be a real exchange, real collaboration and exchange of faculty, exchange of ideas around curriculum, exchange of students to some extent, and sort of sharing of program philosophy and best practices. So that is it in a nutshell, and I guess at the end we'll have opportunities for questions and answers. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Sue. I'm going to just load up the next presentation.